everybody. This is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend, Joff Bell. We are Women in Words, and we talk about all the things that happen on the Women in Words blog during the week and whatever the hell else we feel like talking about. Who knows? I don't know what the hell is going to happen. Hi, Joff. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm planning all the ways that I can take us into the weeds.
and of course, it will fucking happen.
Yeah.
So do you have like a, tell an uplifting story. I want some uplifting story. I want a happy story. Tell me something happy.
I painted an owl on the wall.
That's awesome. Oh my God.
Did I tell you about the owl that's been hanging out in our front yard?
You did, but Joff, you have an aversion to birds. How did you manage to paint an owl on the wall?
It's first of all, it's very stylized. It's one of those, you know, it's all black lines and negative space. It's not like a live looking owl. It's very much symbolic owl. Number one. Number two, Tara feels like the owl is her spirit animal. Like she feels a very deep connection to owls. So
okay.
Yeah, I will do just about anything for that woman, including
including painting a goddamn bird on the wall.
Absolutely. I will absolutely paint a bird on the wall. And what else did I do this week? Oh, I told you we bought a dresser for Noah at the Goodwill. Mm-hmm. So I started working on that, like refinishing it. Refinishing furniture is a very satisfying activity until you have a 12-year-old going, Mom, when is this going to be done? Mom, when is this going to be done? Mom, when is this going to be done? Yeah, then it's not fun at all. So.
Oh my God.
Yes. And my grandbaby is teething. He's got two teeth on the bottom. He's a big slobbery, drooly mess.
Yeah, probably in pain, and it's kind of achy and shitty.
Oh, he's so fussy. So fussy. But he's lovely, and, you know, whatever. I'll still snuggle with him even when he's crying.
God, so. I can't believe he's teething already.
Yeah.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah, he's got two of them. Two big teethers.
Oh, my God. That's so cute. He's a cute baby, too.
He's
oh, my God.
Such a chunky nugget. I love him.
He's just cute. Tara was posting photos. I was like, oh my God, he's so cute.
Yeah, she posts a lot. She likes that kid. She posts lots of pictures.
A little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Maybe a little.
And she's totally a camera whore, right? Like, she's all about the pictures.
Right on.
She and Noah share that in common.
Sweet.
It is
well,
sweet.
Well, those are nice. I feel better now. Okay.
Do you?
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm here for you. There wasn't any actual like stories in that. It was just a bunch of like
anecdotes, and those are important.
Yeah, it was like, here's my update for the week.
And I love it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dear listener, isn't that great? If you have anecdotes at some point, just fucking share them with us. Fun anecdotes because, man, we could all use a little more uplifting things in our lives. I'm just saying, God.
Anecdotes are the best because life happens in like really awfully angry pieces sometimes. So it's way more fun if you can pull out the fun little slices and focus on those instead.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I would like. I want more of that. Thank you.
Yes. More of happiness.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I have another story.
Another happiness? Okay, good.
You know, you may be aware of this already, but I wanted to share with you, Dirt Road Books. You may have heard of this publishing house.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, getting ready to release a collection of short stories from Saatchi Green.
Shut the front door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm trying to act surprised.
No, you don't need to act surprised. I know that. You know. But I'm excited about it. I'm stoked about it. She's
y'all. These stories, fabulous. So good.
Yeah.
The range. I mean, you know, Saatchi, I still think nobody does erotica like Saatchi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing about her stories, and she's an editor as well, and she puts together these amazing anthologies, is that Saatchi's not just about the smut. She's about the people engaging in the smut. And she wants the story. She wants there to be a story there, some kind of backstory to the characters before they just like, you know, hump like bunnies or whatever it is they're going to do, because Saatchi can get into some kink. I'm just saying.
Yeah, she's not afraid to write.
But the other thing is that these stories aren't all erotica.
No.
There's some really, really interesting romantic stories. And then there's some stories that, you know, it's a long-term couple and dealing with things. There's historical fiction in this anthology. It's like a really wide-ranging anthology that incorporates, like I said, historical fiction. It incorporates contemporary fiction. It also has a couple of paranormal sorts of stories.
Yeah, and she's just got a wonderful storytelling voice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yes, friends. And should I tell people when that book is going to be published?
Yeah, I think you should.
Okay, that book is going to drop March 19th.
Isn't that exciting?
So get it for the Ides of March or spring. I don't care, whatever. Just get it. It's so good.
You know, it's almost spring. And it has been snowing here in the Pacific Northwest. What the fuck is going on, Mother Nature? I don't understand it.
Well, fuck. Anyway, yeah. That was something good, too. Yay! Okay.
Climate change isn't a thing, though.
No, not at all. Of course not. Oh, my God. Stop it. Whatever. Okay. Oh, Jesus Christ. Did you see that? Speaking of, just, you know, I'm going to go into the weeds. There are all of these protests happening in, let's see, there's Brussels and I think in Sweden, tens of thousands of kids, of young people walking out of their schools, I guess on Fridays, and hitting the streets to protest climate change and to try to get people's attention to this issue and to get their parents and older people to like deal with it.
So what are they protesting? Are they saying that it's not real? Are they protesting in support of it? Are they
in support? No,
like global warming.
They're trying to get politicians to fucking do something to start really implementing policy that's going to slow this shit down. And they're trying to get their parents and adults, older people, to just like get off their asses and recognize that this problem is real, that it's accelerating, and that we are all seriously fucked.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, tens of thousands. And they're being, I guess one of the spokeswomen is, I think she's 16. Her name is Greta. I think it's Greta. I think she's Swedish. And she is astonishingly articulate and is like taking her message everywhere. It's amazing to watch her and her colleagues in these marches. It's just like, I love this and I want to help. You know, you see that and you're like, I want to help, rather than just going, oh, kids today, look at that, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah,
and that's
I
such a bullshit response. And the other bullshit response is to go, yay, the kids are going to take care of it. No, you're going to help the kids take care of it.
Yes.
Get your ass in the game.
Yeah. And it's not just enough for you to be all like, it's okay, I recycle. Like, actually pay attention to what you're voting for, because the vast majority of greenhouse gases aren't coming from your car. They're coming from the things that you're allowing done in the name of big business, big money. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
friends,
don't get mad at the guy smoking a cigarette and throwing the butt on the ground. Yes, that's disgusting and he shouldn't be doing it. But, you know, look around
the corner.
Set
your sights on the real enemy.
Exactly.
You know, on the real cause.
Exactly. At school, I want to say his humanities teacher gave him this really cool assignment where he had to write an essay about three different activists, right? And they were all given one activist and then they got to pick the other two. So he assigned one specifically, which was, and I'm going to say the name wrong, but I want to say Malala. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I got that right.
Yeah, so she was the one that he assigned, and then they got to pick, you know, two others. And, you know, Noah picked Jazz, of course, right? Jazz, and then I don't remember the third one. But we had some really fabulous conversations about Paul, you know, about activists and who he should, you know, be thinking about. And he was really into it. He looked hard and searched for the right one. It was really cool.
That's amazing.
It's really cool. I mean, my sixth grade class, I didn't even know what the word activist was. This was, you know, Idaho in the 70s. Nobody, well, it was actually the early 80s, but nobody, nobody was worried about my social interactions with the world. Not me, like, not right, my parents, right? Not my teachers, nobody. They were more concerned about my interactions with the local sugar beet trucks because, you know,
yeah,
those because, things yeah. are dangerous. But yeah, it's cool. It's really fucking cool.
It's really cool.
Anyway.
Anyway. Okay. Shall we do this?
We should because I've just
been in the weeds for a while. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, friends. We're going to do this. Here we go. February 16th. One of our readers in residence, Daniel Zion, joined us to talk about reality TV shows, Joe, in books.
Okay.
Right? Who knew? I mean, I was like, really? There's people writing about these things?
Oh no, I've got a book plotted out that is about a reality TV show. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, you know about it. I've told you about it, but I'm not gonna talk about it because
Wait a minute.
No.
I'm calling up that file.
I'm not gonna talk about it.
Oh, I remember that. Okay.
You don't remember it, but that's fine.
I do, but there was somebody else too who mentioned that she wanted to do because there was a reality TV show. It was like one of those bachelor shows. Uh-huh. In Australia. And I remember this on Facebook and everybody was just like laughing their asses off. Two of the women who went to be on that bachelor show, they fell in love with each other.
Yeah.
And now they're all like, you know, datey and cute and shit. And so we were talking about on that thread, and I can't remember whose thread it was, that somebody should totally write that lesbian novel.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I could see that being kind of cute as a reality TV show.
Yes, that would be fun. But so, except anyway, for the fact that I think those shows are awful. So I would not be able to write that book because, God, what is the one? What is the TV show about the reality show producers? Oh, God, it's so good.
I don't even know.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to think about it. It'll come to me. You keep talking. Do your thing.
Okay, I'll keep talking.
Sorry.
Okay, so anyway, the books that Danielle suggests are Queen of Hearts, the most recent release from Canadian author Cheryl Wright. And this novel is an enjoyable, lighter read than I've seen from Wright. She's done some neat things with the format. It's set in Toronto, and we enter the world of a woman-centric lesbian bachelorette production that, despite hitting some snags along the way, ends in a wrap.
That's just
in
fun.
Quotes. That sounds fun. Mm-hmm. We've got Eliza Linsky's The Final Rose. She's a talented indie writer who has a couple of series and standalone novels. The Final Rose is a slow burn romance set within a bachelor reality show production. That sounds
very interesting.
Cool. Oh, and Q Kelly.
Yeah.
Q Kelly, one of her books. Kelly is an indie writer also. Let's see. She puts her toe into the reality TV show waters with Reality Lesbian. And his follow-up, Reality Lesbian 2. In the first book, we follow, quote, straight Lucy Marshall, who ends up on a lesbian dating show and discovers, well, maybe she isn't so straight after all. And how do you move forward when you have deceived everyone from the start? Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, Danielle says there are a number of other reality TV show-based lesbian books. And go ahead and share if you've got them. Put them in the comments. And as a shout out to Erin last week, when she posted this blog, it was National Do a Grouch a Favor Day.
I like that.
I like that too. Please do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Well, thanks, Danielle. Appreciate that. I love when I get those readers lists because I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds really good. More to read. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. All right, friends, February 17th, we were joined by author Allison Solomon, who is giving away two free ebooks. And I need to do a reminder here, friends. We do a lot of giveaways on Women in Words. It's not just the giant ass hoot nanny at the end of the year. It's like throughout the year, authors who blog with us will often do a giveaway of a book or two. So just keep your eye out for that. And you know, who doesn't want to read a free book? I mean, come on, free book.
Yeah, there are very few things in life that, you know, compare with a free book. Yeah,
right?
It's true.
Damn. So true. Allison's blog here is about her novel, Along Came the Rain. And she apparently has rewritten it and given it part, you know, written into it things that she maybe wanted to do originally and didn't. And then she got the rights back to it. And so she decided to redo it the way that she wanted it to be. And she brings up, you know, there's some really intense, apparently, scenes in this new version of the book. So she talks about trigger warnings. And, you know, she attended a panel at GCLS that talked about trigger warnings and should we, as authors, use trigger warnings, you know, on books as a warning, like, okay, trigger warning for some readers, or should we not? So she seems to fall on the side of erring on the side of caution and, yeah, includes like a trigger warning. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think that if you actively know that you're doing something that is a common trigger, like if you're writing a rape scene, right? Label that, right? Because it's going to trigger lots and lots and lots of people. But you know what?
Especially if they're not expecting it, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's
right.
Kind of shitty. Right. You're reading along and all of a sudden you're in a scene and it, you know, a rape happens.
Yeah.
I mean, that pisses me off too. And thank God I don't get triggered about that personally because that's not happened to me. But it really, really bothers me when that happens.
Yeah. And, but on the other hand, literally every event that takes place in life could be a trigger for somebody. Mm-hmm. And you could absolutely just fall into the quagmire trying to do a trigger warning for every possible trigger. And at some point you just have to accept that you're not going to know all of them. And, you know, I don't feel guilty if I don't list something as a trigger warning if I have absolutely no reason to know that it ever could be. Do you know what I mean? Like, it totally triggered me that you were talking about this song playing in this car while driving on this street because I had no way of knowing that. I'm very sorry that you had an experience, but I could not possibly know that to warn you about that trigger. So, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
It's, there's a fine line between necessary and not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I mean, who knows what's going to set some people off and what's not. Something completely that someone would find innocuous.
Mm-hmm.
What might be like really unsettling for some people. So
yeah,
I don't know. And I don't know what the answer is. It's one of those shit. I don't know. Like,
I don't think that you can, I don't think you can blame an author for not labeling something with a trigger warning because you just can't know. You just can't. And, you know, I think it's polite. It's polite to say, hey, this might trigger you if you think it might, but you just can't know all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So there, that's my theory. Be polite, be courteous, but that goes two ways.
Somebody, you know, every once in a while somebody asks me, are there any subjects that you won't write? And I generally respond with, I will not write rape, childhood, or I won't write childhood sexual abuse. I will not write, you know, like bestiality or things like that. Because I don't want to do that. It's not in my writing nature to write something like that. And it physically repels me. I mean, there's so much horrific violence and shit in the real goddamn world. I don't want to bring that into, I mean, I will write maybe a character who experienced something like that in the past, but I'm not going to write a scene with that actually happening, nor am I going to do a scene with the character remembering all the vivid details of how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, I don't want to put myself into that position.
Right. And there are plenty of horrible things that happen that, you know, I don't know. I'm very happy to write about, like, you know, violence and murder that doesn't involve really vulnerable populations.
Right. I mean, I write murder mysteries, but I'm not writing, you know, horrific rape scenes or horrific murder scenes. I mean, like I said, there's so much shit in the real world that, you know, just bombarded every day by the news. I don't feel the need to put that into my fiction. I don't know. And which is why I don't have trigger warnings on my stuff because I don't have things like that. But, you know, now there are people who are, you know, feel like they can come out and be present with more of their feelings, who are maybe ace, or they fall on the ace or the aromantic spectrum. And some people do actually have, like, and there's a name for it, and please forgive me, those of you who are listening. There's a name for people who have there's a condition where you literally are repelled by sexual acts. And mm-hmm. I can't think of what the name of it is, but I mean, like, it causes anxiety and certain physical kinds of reactions. And so I wonder, like, maybe should people include a trigger warning, like sex? I mean, I do on my fanfic, I, you know, very clearly state there is smut in this. So people who have that aversion don't have to read it or engage with it. And that's fine. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. So, tough call.
I'm trying to look it up.
I mean, I follow some people who identify as ace and aromantic, not together. You know, there's people who fall in different places on the spectrum. But there are like two or three of them who have talked about this. They've done Twitter threads on having this condition, or I don't even know if I don't even know if it's a medical condition. It's just they have this thing, and there's a name for it, and it may be tied up.
The only thing, aspects. The only thing I'm finding is literally the word repulsed. Like,
no, you know, that's not it. That's not it. It's there's a
okay.
Term.
Vaginismus.
I don't think that's it either.
This is from livescience.com. Disgust may contribute to a rare sexual disorder, and it's vaginismus.
I really am kind of offended that it seems to have the root of vagina in there.
You and me both.
Because wouldn't people be have an aversion to like penises too? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I think vaginas are like, that's,
I'm sort of
fuck Disneyland. A vagina is the happiest place on earth.
I'm right. I'm super offended. Okay. So anyway, friends.
I'm trying to look up your thing. I don't know.
Stop looking at my thing. That's the thing. Okay, that was just wrong. Don't be looking at my thing, Joe.
Okay. All right.
Let's move on from the vajayjay.
Moving on.
Sorry, we were talking about sex, kind of. Okay. Anyway, thanks, Allison, for joining us. And I mean, I do. I think you're right, Jeff. I think maybe sometimes you should include a trigger warning, but you know, maybe not all the time, depending on what you're writing. So anyway, that's a personal call, I guess, for various authors. Okay, February 18th. Yay! Stevie Carroll from across the pond went to a fan-run science fiction and fantasy convention called Redemption. I want to go just to call that.
I
just want a t-shirt that says Redemption on it.
Redemption in my world, like, brings up, like, thoughts of banjos playing and, you know, Burt Reynolds on badness.
Jesus Christ, no, not that's Deliverance.
Deliverance, there you go. Yes, that's completely different. All right, I feel better now. How about if I get you a t-shirt that says Redemption on it?
I would love that.
To make up for putting that image in your head.
But then it might get a whole bunch of super scary, religiously inclined people with, like, would follow me around and stuff. That would be kind of creepy. Huh?
You could form a cult without even meaning to.
Mm-hmm. And by religiously inclined, friends, I am not talking all religions. Hashtag not all religions. Oh my God. Anyway, Jesus Christ. Okay. So Redemption took place in, and this one, Stevie says that they, I guess they alternate. They alternate years since 1999. And the last two have been hosted by the Royal Victoria Hotel in Sheffield. I just want to go because it sounds so cool. Victoria Hotel.
I want to go there.
She's a picture of it too. Stevie always posts pictures with her blog, so I love it. The hotel was originally built in 1862 to serve the Manchester, Sheffield, and Lincolnshire Railway, later the Great Central Railway. So, oh, cool. It's a railway hotel. And the Sheffield Victoria Station. Neato. So, and Stevie has a thing for old railways. She's blogged about them before, and sure enough, she writes, being rather keen on old railways. I've spent some time during both the most recent conventions trying to find evidence of the old station. I can just see her. I'm off to find the old station. Off I go in her cosplay. She was cosplaying at this convention. So then she has a picture of the interior of the hotel and then goes back into talking about Redemption 2019, which broke slightly with tradition, and it took place in January rather than February, and it was a little down on the numbers. So, oh, bummer. But they had some good panels, activities, and some had to be run by members picked at the last minute to stand in for those who were unexpectedly absent. That's a good title for a book, Unexpected Absence.
Or Unexpectedly Absent.
Yeah, some kind of gothic
thing. That's, or, right? You know, something about a teacher. You think goth, I think teachers, whatever.
Oh my god, anyway, so
all right, whatever.
Panel topics, friends: cosplay, combat and genre shows, how to write dystopia in a world that's seemingly gone mad. That is dystopic. That's a good question. LGBT plus representation in genre shows and other things. They had talks with audience participation on things relevant to the setting, such as railway ghosts and Sheffield locations used in Doctor Who.
Wow. Oh,
that's so awesome. Oh my god, this sounds great. I want to go to this.
It does. Everything that Stevie does sounds great.
Sounds great, right? It's just, yeah. I feel like I'm living vicariously, like, through some, like, really interesting Indiana Jones person.
You know what? I feel like this is what I feel like with Stevie. I feel like she went to like a seminar on how to live your best life, and I should have gone with her to that seminar.
Right?
I'd be like enjoying life the way she is, but instead I'm, you know, just being me instead.
Right? It's just like, yeah. I mean, I'm like, God, Stevie, how did this happen? She's like, oh, didn't you go to that seminar?
I need to what? Learn how to live my best life, like Stevie. So true.
Damn, we missed that seminar. We didn't even read the syllabus, Joe.
Yeah. God, I didn't. Damn it.
Shit. Okay. February 19th, Ash Bartlett joined us. The title is
Ashley, my dear sweet friend.
I know. Lip gloss and action flicks.
Yeah.
So anyway. The point is here, friends.
Rachel Weisz is amazing and sexy. And The Mummy wasn't really a bad film. Sorry, I just agree with all of those assertions.
But the point of this blog is family, the nature of family, and what makes a family. And so Ashley's point
clearly
is,
I missed,
like,
the point.
Clearly you didn't read past the first few sentences.
Oh, no. I read the whole thing. Just that's what stuck with me.
So anyway.
I feel bad now.
Anyway, she talks about her brother. And I guess she and her brother had, they would like watch the stupid movie, The Mummy. And it's really, it's a glorious sequel. The Mummy Returns on repeat. Ashley, the first one's better. As an adult.
They're all wonderful. Don't even pretend that they're not.
I remember none of the movie, but I knew everything that was going to happen a split second before it did. Every line, every action sequence was ingrained in my muscle memory. I wanted to text my brother because she had just rewatched it. I wanted to remind him how we learned Glenlivet was Scotch and that we were fascinated by Egypt, not because of King Tut, but Imhotep and Akhenaten. I didn't, because my brother and I text each other twice a year, once on his birthday, once on mine. Our text history is just alternating, happy birthday, bro, thanks, happy birthday, bro, thanks, happy birthday, bro, thanks. You could write a dissertation on my relationship with my brother. Actually, you could probably write a really boring Psych 101 paper on me and my brother, because we are textbook. Our parents divorced when I was 5 and he was 3. We bonded with each other more than we did our parents. We were close enough in age and disposition to have the same interests. In our younger years, people mistook us for twins. In middle and high school, we accidentally got the same haircut on more than one occasion. I was always fascinated by large families and the concept of sisters. And here's where we get into, like, the sisters. They all seemed regulated by gender. I was thankful to not have a sister. I was thankful my relationship with my brother made me more boy than it did girl. Of course, that's all with the clarity of hindsight. When I was young, all I knew was I didn't like girls. I know now that I was manifesting internalized misogyny and transphobia and heterosexism. Everything shifted when I was 17. My brother and I grew apart. My little sister was born. I started dating my wife, and I was adopted by my future sisters-in-law. So family can be, it can come from, you know, anywhere, literally. And my mom always says, blood doesn't necessarily make a family.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true. I mean, especially if you're LGBT, if you're queer in any sense of the word, you've probably spent a lot of your life making your family, because maybe your bio family wasn't all that great.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is fortunate, you know, in that regard. So a lot of us have found family that we consider extended family. I mean, I'm estranged from both sides of my extended family. Not really estranged. I just have nothing to do with them. It wasn't a formal announcement. By God, I hate you. It was just like, ew, I'm just going to go over here.
Yeah, I estranged myself. Yeah. I
don't have much to do with my extended family. I don't know who they are. I don't really want to know, because what I do know is more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents were the black sheep of their families. So basically, we're just like out here alone. So I formed my family, with my extended family networks, with people who are not related by blood to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. My life is enriched. Ashley points out that, you know, she got all these sisters through her wife, which is really cool. And they spend a lot of time hanging out. And then she talks about some of the things that they do. Like, the wife and I spent today with her two oldest sisters. We did nothing, and it was everything. I took off my shoe to show off my pedicure in the middle of a restaurant. One of the sisters and I debated the origins of English idioms. The other sister let someone go ahead of us in the coffee line because our sisters are coming. Well, her wife and my sisters, but she's my sister and we are all sisters, but they are married. Am I giving too much information?
Yes, yes, you are. Keep giving it.
She says, I think I get it now. It's not about avoiding lip gloss or watching Rachel Weisz sword fight. It's about someone who will kiss you goodbye and say, I love you, and know that when you say, yeah, this didn't suck, it means I love you too.
Yeah.
And that's, she nails it. That's mm-hmm. Ash, you nailed it. God damn it.
Why, you know, are you so, why so is she so awesome?
Mm-hmm.
I don't fucking know. It's irritating.
I love it. That'd be awesome.
I tell her all the time that she makes me want to throw up a little. She told me a story about her family, and it was not a happy, warm, fuzzy feet story like this. It was about their trip to Mexico and how their mom got detained because she didn't have her green card. But, you know, whatever. That was the story I got. This one's nicer.
This one's way nicer. You know, families, oh my God, you guys are like, they're your primary point of imprinting into the world. Mm-hmm. And no matter how you think, oh, you know, no, I got past my family, but no, you mm-mm. didn't.
You didn't.
There's always going to be an imprint there, no matter how good, bad, or indifferent, or whatever the fuck with your family. You are carrying bits of them with you, even if you left at 2 and carried your little toddler bag out of there. You still have your family embedded mm-hmm. somewhere in your brain.
It's true.
And I'm not saying that to be like, you're fucking doomed. I'm just saying that, you know,
left it too with your little toddler bag. That was awesome, by the way.
If you go out in the world and, you know, then you have to kind of unpack and figure out, well, why am I like this? And it is a good thing to sort of figure that out. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm all for that. And it doesn't mean you don't have that. You can't be angry at your family or be sad about things that happened. I think those are healthy responses, but you don't want to like carry that all the time and let it define who you become.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the circumstances you grow up in. Some people grow up in really great families. So
yeah. Some people do.
Yeah.
I don't. I've never met any of them, but I've heard about them.
I mean, that's what's so amazing is like, you know, there are so many people who are coming from families who have like so much dysfunction. And yet they become the most amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
They turn that dysfunction into like, function, into action, into becoming the best person they could possibly be.
Yeah, and I love those people.
Right? And others bear those wounds and they can't get past them. And I find as I get older, I don't get as impatient with people like that, because for whatever reasons, sometimes you just cannot carry the burden. And that's just how it is.
Yeah, that's just how it is.
So anyway, thank you, Ashley. That was a really great blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does that.
God damn it. Mm-hmm. All right, friends. February 20th, joined by, yay, Clifford Mae Henderson. Hi, Cliffy. My gosh, it's been a while. It's been since the Hootenanny or something.
It's been a minute. Like
damn.
Mm-hmm. I love her, too. So,
I love her, too. Ants.
What about them?
A-N-T-S.
Yeah.
Ants. Not your great auntie.
No. Ants. Got it.
Yeah. Cliffy says she's had ants on the brain and in her house.
That just sounds like a bad combination of things.
Oh, my God. That's just bad. No, Cliffy, no. So she finds that tiny lone scout ants poking around on her windowsills, or they're squeezing up under the floorboards of our old Spanish bungalow built in 1928. On land that is slowly and constantly making its way toward the ocean. This continental shift makes itself known by way of cracking plaster walls and windows that one day simply refused to close all the way. One time we even had a window spontaneous explode. What?
Huh.
My wife and I were startled awake by what we thought was a rock thrown through our window. On further inspection, hearts crashing in our terrified chests. Who would do this hateful thing in the middle of the night? We discovered that the window that had shattered was the inside window of a small double-paned one. The torque of the wall had created such pressure on the poor little window that it just gave up.
That shit happens.
My point being, our house has all kinds of entry points for ants.
Dun, dun, dun. You know, they have these really cool things, this expanding insulation spray foam stuff.
Yes, I love that stuff.
It'll fill up any old gap you find there, Cliffy.
That's an old ass house, so you know how those old houses are.
Yeah, I do. I don't have one of those old ass houses.
So far, she says we've been lucky. Yay!
Mm-hmm. Oh, I approve of luck.
I do too. Mm-hmm. So then she goes down to talk about recently she was feeding a friend's cat while she was away to keep out the ants. She kept her cat's bowl in another bigger bowl filled with water. Mm-hmm. Well, the ants just looked at that moat of water and laughed their high-pitched little laughs. Then for the good of the colony, they sacrificed some of their own by making a living bridge across the water, leaving the other ants free passage to and from the prized kitty kibble.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, ants are pretty... You know, they got that shit going on.
Oh, they're very smart, and they communicate. And
they do communicate. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. You can't beat an ant colony on the search for food, man. You're not gonna
win.
Those guys are badass. They're as impressive as like a beehive. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she says that the theater where she teaches gets infested each winter. And then she has a great story about going to Jamaica to visit her grandparents. One afternoon, we were visiting one of our friends, a proper, slightly eccentric English lady. We'd been invited for tea. Her house, a large Victorian guarded by several fierce Rottweilers, was nestled in the lush rainforest. I remember being horrified by the 6-lane highway of ants crawling up the wall next to the tapestried stool I was sitting on. Ah, the ants, she said, noting what must have been quite a look on my 10-year-old face. When people come first to the island, they are quite alarmed by all the ants. They see the ants in the sugar. They refuse sugar in their tea. Then, after living here a while, they pick the ants from the sugar before stirring it into their tea. But when they've been here long enough, they stir the ants right in.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's about right. Come on. Protein. What are you going to do? So, Cliffy says, I have the feeling if any species survives climate change, it'll be ants, and power to them, I say. This planet is theirs as much as it is ours. In the meantime, however, I'm going to encourage them to find shelter elsewhere. Ants.
Yeah. They march.
I will take ants over roaches.
Oh, any day of the week. Or ants over, because you know, in summer you get those, you know, like during season change, you get those stupid little tiny ants the little sugar ants that are awful.
Yes,
and you can never, you can't do anything to get rid of all of them unless you want to like go napalm the whole fucking neighborhood, right?
And still, they'd still fucking be there.
And I'm not gonna napalm anything, right? I'm just not gonna do it. But fucking yeah, you know what's fucking worse? Ants, you know what's worse than roaches? And I've never had this issue. I just, like, I look at the pictures and I want to, it creeps me the fuck out. Fucking bed bugs.
Oh, my neighbor had those. No, thank you.
No, I remember when you told me about that and I was very, very worried about you.
I was fucking, I moved, y'all.
Yeah.
I was living in a triplex. I was in the middle unit and my neighbor on one side got bed bugs, which meant, because I shared a fucking wall, I had to go through bed bug treatment, even though there weren't any in my house. So what I did was I went through the goddamn treatment and washed every bit of cloth in my house, threw a bunch of stuff out, and then fucking moved 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, we're done. We are done here. Bye.
You're the one that taught me how to check for bed bugs in like hotels and on airplane seats. Cause you went through like that whole crash course in education, right?
Jesus God. The guy, the bed bug guy, and then I was online like looking shit up. And now when cause I travel so much, you guys, literally I carry a small mag light, little flashlight with a white LED bulb, because that's the best way to check your mattresses. I check mattresses, drapes, upholstery, no matter where I'm staying, hotel, Airbnb, I check everything because there is no fucking way I want to bring that shit home. No,
right?
Thank you. I was talking to the guy who was like doing the treatment and I was like, all right, seriously, dude, which, you know, it seems to me like roaches are easier to get rid of than bed bugs. And he goes, oh, definitely. Definitely. If you had to pick roaches. And I was like, oh, God, so gross.
I don't want to pick either.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that's just, wow. Yeah, I suddenly everything itches just because we started talking about it.
And here's the thing. And the guy scared the living shit out of me because you know where else you can pick up bed bugs, y'all? I'm not making this shit up. Movie theaters.
Oh, I believe that.
And I get a lot
of seats.
Yeah. So what I do is, and he told me this, what I do is, I don't care how weird this makes me sound, I have this little spray bottle of pure grain alcohol.
Yeah. Like, and you spray it?
Like 95 proof, at least like 90 proof. Yeah. Because it dries bed bugs out and it will kill them. So I spray it on the seat before I sit down. That's why I go a little bit early because I don't want people to think they got some crazy person in.
Dude, I know people who do that when they get on an airplane.
Totally
makes sense. Yeah, when we travel now, my family, they know they're not allowed to put anything down on the beds, especially not because we take our pillows. We take, you know, sometimes we take blankets because, you know, we're just picky like that. They know they're not allowed to put anything down until I actually check, and they just stand there and look annoyed, but they wait. They wait.
But yeah, I mean, shit, it'll, you know, because you, these fucking planes, they've been overseas. You don't know what they're bringing back.
Mm-hmm.
They do not clean, okay? Mm-hmm. All they do is pick stuff up off the floor and out of the seat backs, and they wear gloves when they do this. Let that sink in. The dirtiest part of a plane, and a flight attendant told me this, the dirtiest part of a plane is always the tray table.
Gross.
Because they don't wipe that shit down. So the first thing I do is I carry wipes, Jove. I get on the plane, and I wipe down that tray table, front, back, everything there. Wipe down my seat rest and I wipe down the back of my seat if it's one of those vinyl seats because I don't want my hair touching. I can't get my hair to touch that seat until it's been wiped.
I am really glad that you do that though.
It might be why I've been pretty, you know, I fly so much, why I don't get sick that often because I make that effort to like clean things and don't touch my face. I have my hand sanitizer and my wipes and I'm just like, I just cannot. And I don't want to put my computer on a nasty tray table. Gross. Because then you put your computer into your bag. Ew. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I will wipe the computer down too after it's been on the tray table, even if I've wiped the tray table.
You know what I do?
I
just don't fly.
Exactly.
It's
which
really
is an
gross.
Option. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's
I am
so
all
wrong.
For it. I am all for it. Stop flying. Oh my God. Thanks, Cliffy.
Yeah.
That creepy segue. God. Anyway, thank you, Cliffy. We love you.
We do. So we do love you, Cliffy. Crazy amounts.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. February 21st, RG Emanuel joined us and has a question. Do readers like dark, as in dark topics, emotionally or psychologically heavy?
I like and dark chocolate. Says,
yeah, but she says, you know, what I'm asking is, do readers like to read stories that are emotionally or psychologically heavy? I'm not talking about the sorrow of a broken heart. I mean, every romance has that. I'm talking about emotional distress that comes from abuse, domestic violence, depression, and mental illnesses. There are so many demons that lurk in the in a mind, and not everyone is comfortable reading about them. But are there enough people who do? Is it worth a writer's time to write a story that's dark?
And I say yes. Question,
but the second question, Joe, if a writer is in a dark place, whatever reasons, is she able to write light? Can someone who is deeply depressed, weighed down with the concerns of her life, write a fluffy romance or a lighthearted romp through a general storyline? That's a good question.
I don't think so.
I mean, RG brings up J.K. Rowling, who struggled with clinical depression but managed to turn her demons into, well, demons or magical beings.
Yeah.
While this Harry Potter series is not necessarily lighthearted, its presentation and messages are decidedly different than stories in which the characters go mad and do unjustified harm to themselves or others, or simply limp away wounded, never to be healed. And that's true. The Harry Potter stories, there were dark elements there. That is definitely true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely, and it got darker as it went along.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, it really did. Yeah.
Totally. Totally dark. Totally dark.
Have you, do you write when you're depressed?
No. I'm completely dysfunctional in all areas of my life, including writing when I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. And it's, I know you and I have differing opinions on this, right? But when I started taking antidepressants, it affected my ability to be creative. And I know it doesn't affect you that way. It actually helps you to be creative. But
I'm not on meds anymore, Joe, so I'm not affected.
But no, you said when you were, you felt like you were more creative.
It did help me get things into perspective so that I was able to better function. I was in grad school at the time, so I was not really doing creative writing.
Yeah, I don't want to, for me, the trade-off was, I mean, it's totally worth it. I'll take longer to write a book. I'm totally, totally satisfied with that trade-off. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know that it affects everybody the same way, but it definitely impacts me.
I'm trying to remember. I was on meds for about 5 years, and it was toward the tail end of my dissertation because I was unable to write my dissertation.
And
I realized I needed to get some help. So that's why I made the decision. And once I was on the meds and going to therapy and unpacking my bullshit and everything and all the shit and learning to deal with my depression, I started being able to work on my dissertation. And that's what helped me finish it, was going on to the meds. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, well, so, there you go.
I don't know. You know, and I was thinking about, you know, if writers are in the throes of depression or something, are they able to write? I think yes. I mean, Hemingway was trying to drink his depression away, and he was writing.
And was brilliant. I'm thinking like, Catcher in the Rye. The fuck was his name?
J.D. Salinger, yeah.
Thank you, right? What about
Virginia Woolf?
Edgar Allan Poe. Virginia Woolf, way Poe. Fucked up.
There's another one.
Anais Nin.
Oh my God, yeah. And think about artists, Vincent van Gogh. I mean,
he wasn't just depressed, he was fucking crazy.
He was so fucked up, and look what he created.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he revolutionized the world.
Yeah. So it's a tough call. It just depends on the person and the writer. Mm-hmm. That story, Joe, that I wrote, it's on Smashwords now. If anybody wants to go pick it up, it's freebie. Floral Designs, about
I love that story.
It's a cute little Valentine's it's kind of fluffy, but it's sort of also kind of, I don't know, it's just, I wrote that story right after I had my mastectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at home from work, and my parents were there to help. And I just really needed something romantic that made me feel like there was life beyond losing a tit, you know? So mm-hmm. And writing that story was so cathartic. It helped so much after, you know, there was, I started writing it like I had been home from the hospital for like 3 days learning. And after a mastectomy, friends, you have these, it's like after any major surgery, you have like drains. It's gross in your body. Mm-hmm. And you have to like monitor the output. It's like mm-hmm. nasty. And when you have a mastectomy, you have they give you a vest. It's literally, you put on a vest. Mine was white. And it has inside pockets that you put the drain bulbs in so that they can, you know, your body can expel the nasty into the little drain bulb. And so you can go out and about and not worry about your drains like flying around. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have this vest, and I would wear this vest, and I had it, I bought these big flannel shirts and sweatshirts to wear over the vest because, you know, I didn't want to discuss it. Anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, if the drain, and you guys, this tubing, when they pulled that tubing out.
Oh, yeah.
I swear to God, it was 3 feet long. I almost peed myself watching the doctor pull that shit out of my tit. Like, what? Or out of where my tit had been. It was like, what the? How did you get that in there?
Mm-hmm.
And while I was, you know, before they removed it, I couldn't move a certain way with that arm because the drain would hit a nerve, my brachial nerve, and it would shoot down my arm. So when I was writing that story, I had to be really careful how I was moving my arm because I would get this boom, this nerve pain. And so it took me a little bit to figure that out. And once I did, I mean, I worked on that story for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. It made me feel good though to write it.
It's a good story.
So anyway, I think people who are in the throes of really deep, dark depression can write. As to what they write, I don't know. For some, mm-hmm. I write fluffy shit to escape deep, dark.
Mm-hmm.
Others may write dark to process. I did that for years. I wrote dark to process, you know. That was mm-hmm. before I got help. I think writing is a processing tool. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? Are you writing now?
Yes. Well, I'm rewriting. I'm not writing. I'm rewriting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So as you're on the meds, are they helping you to, like, focus on writing? Can you, like,
no.
work on something?
Yeah, but it takes, like, I want to say maybe 8 times longer than I used to. Like, I used to be able to write a book really, really quickly and be pleased with the results. And now it's not.
It's harder.
It takes some time, and mostly it takes that time just to convince me that I actually need to sit down and work on it because I'm distracted by the rest of my mm-hmm. life. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not like you don't have anything else going on. Jesus Christ.
I live in a world where everybody has stuff going on though. You know, we all just have to, you know, we all prioritize whatever. So
yeah.
Like right now I'm super distracted by tools and building things because everybody should have tools to play with.
Mm-hmm. Everybody should have tools, period. I don't care what kind of tools, just have tools.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's all part of that. And that's the thing, right? Like, you know, your creative outlet can be so many different things. Like, I'm not an artist, but I painted an owl on the wall. That's a creative outlet. I play with my tools. I build things. I love making. Tara likes to do wands. She likes to paint wands and decorate them and make them all fancy. And so that gives me something to turn on my lathe, right? That's a creative process. Mm-hmm. Writing a book, that's a creative process. Editing a book, that's a creative process, right? So, you know, I can't have every single thing I do be a creative process, if that makes sense. Some things aren't going to be, you know, creative. They're just going to be things that I do. So when I spend all my time with my tools, maybe I don't get to write as much, but I'm still being creative.
You're still being creative. It's just not right.
Yeah. It's just a little different. That's all right.
That is all right. Thanks, RG.
Yes, thank you.
For making us, again, go into the weeds.
Yeah, but that's a good blog. It's a really good blog.
We're weeding. She's a good writer. What the hell?
Well, she is, but this is
durr.
Well, yes, there's a durr there, but this is a really good blog. I'm just gonna say that.
It was a very good blog.
Yeah,
yay!
I mean, not every blog that a person writes is like very good. She always writes good blogs, but this one's thought provoking. This one's,
I liked it.
Yeah. Plus it had a penguin. Or is that a puffin? No, no, what the hell
it's
it is.
A puffin. It's a puffin. Yeah.
Which is like a penguin.
Speaking of penguins, yes. I'm going to go into the weeds.
Okay.
I saw this great article the other day. I can't remember what newspaper it was, but it was about an emperor penguin, the only emperor penguin of his kind in the whole world because he was completely black.
Oh.
Except he had like these two gray stripes on one of his wings. But okay. He was black. He was a completely black emperor penguin. And they caught a picture. The scientists caught a picture of him standing near, like, all the other emperor penguins who have, like, you know, the white chest and a lot of white. Their heads are white. Their chests are white. Some of their parts of their legs are white. And, like, the sea of white penguins. And here's this one black penguin. It's really amazing. I felt sad for him because it was a very rare mutation that caused that pigmentation in him.
I don't feel bad for him.
I hope he finds a nice girlfriend or boyfriend. Well, because, you know, penguins do sometimes same-sex mate, y'all. Just saying.
Penguins are pretty fluid.
Yeah.
That's right. That wasn't even meant to be a pun, but God, it worked out as one. Anyway, enough with the penguins. Move on.
Oh my God, we're going to make that the title of the
Penguins are pretty fluid. Yeah. All right.
February 22nd, Aaron Zach joined us. Music. It's a music blog where she talks about music. And thank God, because I love music. Okay, so Aaron starts out when I was around 8 or 9. My cousin Barbara would watch me for my mom, who worked a full-time nursing job basically her entire life. That's a hard job.
Yeah.
One of the things that made not seeing my mom all the time slightly more bearable was being able to spend time with my older, super cool cousin. She taught me a lot about life, love, and music. She loved music. She would put on different artists' cassettes at the time, and I'd learn about all these cool bands like the Beatles and the Cure. She went on to college and became a music teacher, which was perfect for her. So that's really cool.
Yes, it's very cool. And we all have that story, right? Like the older cousin that taught us something about music. Mine was Joan Jett. My older cousin was named Tammy, and she taught me about Joan Jett. She introduced Joan Jett. Uh-huh. I'm going to say Joan Jett one more time.
Okay. My older cousins were assholes. I taught myself about music.
No, I was so... I wanted to be her. She was always stoned, though, and I didn't realize it. I just thought she was super mellow. Anyway.
Just super mellow.
Yeah. I'm looking at this list. I think I need to, like, look some stuff up.
Do you remember back in the day, friends? Well, no, those who were not born back in the day. Of course you don't remember, but some of you who are listening may remember this. Back in the day, before the mystical, magical thing of the interwebs, we had teen magazines.
Yes. Yes.
I used to get these British pop culture magazines because I was weird and different in high school. And in the back of those magazines, you would find pen pal requests.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you would do the snail mail shit. So I was pen pals with people all over the world, Germany, Australia, the UK. And one of the things that we all did was we exchanged cassette tapes.
Nice.
Of music. And that's how I learned about, you know, new wave coming out of the UK. I was a total goth head. I was a total Susie and the Banshees fanatic.
Love Susie and the Banshees.
I was like, that was my scene. I was not really into US-based music throughout the 80s and the early 90s. But that was my gateway into becoming obsessed with music. And when I started my undergraduate degree, I was at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and they had this record store on the hill. That's what it was called. It was like the off-campus area with all the shops and restaurants where the students hung out. And they had, in the basement was the import section. And I would buy, you know, rare shit on vinyl and cool shit that you couldn't find mainstream. Because, you know, who the hell was listening to the Cocteau Twins in 1986 besides me?
Nobody.
And people in the UK.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there were others, I'm sure. But, I mean, this was how you did it. We didn't, you know, you mm-hmm. got vinyl, you got tapes. Or you got the vinyl and you put it on tape. So you preserved the vinyl and you wore the tape out.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. I still have some of those. They're pristine, too, because I would just record them once or twice, you know, and wear the tape out.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, music. So, yes, Erin, I'm pretty sure you're my music soulmate.
I'm pretty sure she is. Anyway, that's the end of the week, dude.
It is the end of the week. And thank you. Oh, by the way, Erin shared a playlist, you all. Go look at it.
Yeah, it looks
and
good.
Listen to some of the music because it is... I mean, I recognize just about every artist on here. This shit is good.
Yeah, and
so.
She's got a lot of Florence in the Machine, so that makes it totally worthwhile. But listen, you and I have been talking for an hour. It's time for us both to shut up and move on.
Oh my God, we should shut up and everybody else just go talk. Okay.
Yeah, dear listener, this has been the Week in Review for Women in Words. I am Jove Bell, here today with Andy Marquette. You can find us online at womenwords.org. Please like, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. Do all of those things to help the other lesbians of the internet to find us. Until next week, thank you so much for listening.